Welcome to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliott Price. Brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
There's a lead pass. In on Mo McDavid. Scores! 3-1 Canada.
Here's the 1-2 pitch from Martinez. Ball hit out into center field. Going back, Marquise Grissom. He's got it. Dennis Martinez has pitched a perfect game.
There's a shot. They score!
The 2-1 pitch. Cordero swings. Base hit. The Expos will win. The Expos will win. Cordero with a base hit to win the ball game in the bottom of the ninth inning.
The drought is over. Drink it in, Canada. World champions.
And now here's your host, Elliott Price.
I've always been a fan of Patrick Waugh. I suppose not a fan of all the things he's done. I got to know a young goaltender once upon a time. Watched him sit on a stool outside the Habs dressing room in Madison Square Garden, 20 years old, surrounded by most of hockey's media after a playoff performance of a lifetime that would carry his team to a Stanley Cup final. I've seen him away from the rink, laughing at a Boston sports card shop as the proprietor talked about the Habs goaltender whose poster was hanging over his head, but had no idea who was standing right in front of him. I saw him from a distance, Patrick, walking away from the Montreal Canadiens and getting traded into two more Stanley Cups. Patrick was arrested on domestic violence charges. They were dropped 3 months later. Watched his son beat up another defenseless goalie. Watched his other son use his stick as a toothbrush on a Montreal junior player. For most of his career, Patrick has gotten what he wanted, including that trade to Denver. Looks like, at least until his next stop, somebody has told him no. And Patrick's game is over. He's taken his ball, and he's gone home.
To running with a traveling man, left her mama crying with her head in her hand. Such a sad case, so broken hearted. She said, "Mama, gotta go, gotta get out of here, gotta get out of town, tired of hanging around. I gotta roll on between the ditches. Just an ordinary story about the way things go round and around. Nobody knows, but the highway goes on forever." That old highway rolls on forever. Lord, she never would have done it if she hadn't got drunk.
Welcome to the show on a day when Canada has put up another gold on the board and a silver. And it's still all women. Rosie McLennan, she was given the job of carrying in the flag for Canada at this Olympic Games because she was the only one to win a gold during the last summer games. Nobody has ever defended in her discipline. Well, now they have. Little scary there, but she got it done. Mm-hmm. And a silver for Canada as well in rowing. We'll talk about that as we march. And, of course, the whole country in mid-celebration for our golden penny. And we'll hear from her brother. Coming up on the show today. Should be a lot of fun. Other than that, a lot of talk about Patrick Waugh leaving the Avalanche. We had a little bit on our plate yesterday. We'll have Dave Stubbs from NHL.com. And we'll also hear from Eric Johnson, Colorado Avalanche defenseman, who will miss Patrick terribly as his coach, but also has big words for Joe Sakic. So it doesn't sound like he wanted to take sides. It sounds like he wanted everybody to stay together and be one happy family. That's not going to happen in Colorado. Also, a little bit of conversation before we go on the worth of Jose Bautista. You heard Price and Iuni talk about it. You'll hear Blair and Carey. I don't know who holds more weight, but we will have the conversation about that as we go. Grant Robinson on vacation. He'll be back on Monday. Freddie sitting in on the opening faceoff. That's coming up next. You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliott Price on CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal.
Tackling the latest headlines and the hottest topics, it's time for the opening faceoff with Elliott Price and Grant Robinson.
Sitting in today for Grant Robinson is Freddie Iuni.
Yes. All right. Are we ready for the face-off? I think we are. Okay. First question. LeBron James has re-upped with the Cleveland Cavaliers for a 3-year, $100 million. He's 31. I don't know if this will take him to the end of his career after 3 years, but he'll be 34. It'll be in the ballpark. What does this signing mean for Cleveland, the Cavaliers, I should say? And what does it mean for LeBron in terms of a legacy, if that matters at all?
It doesn't mean anything.
Doesn't mean anything.
No, because this is how this was always going to play out. LeBron James was going home to finish his career, right, and hopefully win a championship. So the number of years that he has signed up for plays into some sort of how much money are you going to get. This was always about figuring out how many each time to finish his career in Cleveland. He was not going back home to go somewhere else to win a championship. So I don't think that it matters how many years. I think that he could have gotten even more money than what he's getting right now. But LeBron, I mean, what's enough, you know?
No, fair enough.
So he wants to stay in Cleveland. He wants to make sure that there'll be some people that can help him to win another championship. It's amazing that he's won one. Cleveland winning a championship is ridiculous in its own right. But I don't think it means anything at all, other than I think the day that he went back to Cleveland and the day that they won a championship there, that's everything that needed to happen.
So that whole debacle of the decision, that's long forgotten then in that case for LeBron.
For LeBron, for Cleveland, for everybody. Cleveland has waited a half a century for a championship. They would, if you told Cleveland fans, you're going to win a championship, but you're going to have to suffer through LeBron winning two in Miami. Is that okay? Yes, it would have been okay.
Do you think this sets Cleveland up to win or to be in their hunt for the next couple
Anywhere next 3 years? LeBron is, it sets a team up. LeBron's been in the final, what is it now, 30 straight years? Is that what it is?
Yes.
Yeah. Anything anywhere LeBron goes, that sets that team up for a chance to win a championship.
Okay. So, I'm going to change subjects here. We're going to talk about baseball. But in a different sort of light, for the last couple of weeks, we talked about pitchers' arms, specifically with the Aaron Sanchez decision in Toronto. We talked about Jeff Passan's book. So we've been talking about the arm. But what I want to know from you is, what have been the four best pitches you've seen by a starter? So as an example, and why that pitch you think was so effective. So, you know, I'll give a poor example, I'll use the starters because I know you said a starter should have about three or four pitches as opposed to a closer or a reliever. So, for instance, the bad example would be Mariano Rivera's cutter.
I get it. So Mariano Rivera's cutter would be there. Out.
I want a starting pitcher.
Okay, starting pitchers.
So four, and why they were so effective for you.
Nolan Ryan's curveball and Sandy Koufax's curveball. Because while those guys threw close to 100 miles an hour, it was the curveball that you had to sit back on, and it was the curveball that got you out. It was drop off the table for both of those guys, and it's interesting because both of them went from having trouble throwing strikes at the beginning of their careers to getting people out with regularity by throwing strikes and striking out a crazy amount. In fact, they are one strikeout away from each other on the most strikeouts in a season. So curveballs for those two guys.
Okay.
Steve Carlton's slider would definitely have to be there. It was devastating. It certainly killed the Expos on the last day of the 1979 season. He's a Hall of Famer, won over 300 games.
What did that pitch do? Like, what was it doing to hitters?
It goes as opposed to a curveball, which comes in slower and comes into, if you're a right-handed pitcher, for Carlton, he was a lefty, a right-handed hitter, a right-hander, it comes in at you and ends up away from you. But a slider comes in harder and goes down and away to right-handed hitters. Certainly Pedro Martinez, changeup. Pedro, again, all these guys had incredible fastballs, but as a starting pitcher, that's not good enough. If that's all you have, then you are a closer. If you need other pitches, and Pedro had a devastating changeup. A split-finger pitch that Bruce Sutter had got him to the Hall of Fame. I don't know if he was a Hall of Fame pitcher, but he was a guy who got outs in his career before anybody else really dominated with that pitch. So
And what about whose fastball would you want?
I guess Aroldis Chapman. Right now, he's throwing harder than anybody.
Okay, perfect. All right, so moving on. The U.S. women's soccer team lost today.
That's too bad.
That is too bad. By all intents, they're a monstrous team. That country's women's team from 96 to 2012 on the soccer pitch has won gold every year except for 2000, where they won silver. They just won the 2015 Women's World Cup. My question for you is, what have been some of the biggest sporting upsets you've ever seen? You've ever seen Olympic professional. So, for instance, I'll start it off. I'll give you a chance to think, and maybe I'll take a few that are obvious. Buster Douglas beating Tyson, for instance.
Well, you're going to ask me a question, and then you're going to give me all the good ones. I mean, what's the point?
Well, because you are you, and I'm me, so I get the easy ones.
Oh, I see.
See, there we go. This isn't...
Okay.
Another one I found a big upset was Robin Soderling beating Nadal in 2009 at the French Open, where Nadal hadn't ever lost. He'd won four or five by that point in a row. And I guess the U.S. men's basketball team in 2002,
yes,
the World Championships, FIBA World Championships.
All right.
So
you'd have to say the American team that won the Miracle Gold, although when you look back on that team and the players that came out of that, they were a lot better than they were given credit for at the time. But the Miracle Gold medal, Miracle on Ice, beating the vaunted Russians, and I guess anybody beating those Russians was significant. So 1980 at Lake Placid, the Americans. Hey, Leicester City, this year, they were
Yeah.
8 zillion to 1 to win the Premier League, so you'd have to put them in there. I'm trying to think of crazy. As you look back on that team, they were better than they were given credit for. But the New York Jets in Super Bowl III were 17.5 point or 19 point underdogs in Super Bowl number 3 to the Baltimore Colts, and they ended up winning that. There was a series where the Los Angeles Kings knocked off the Edmonton Oilers when the Oilers were on their way to greatness. So there have been some incredible upsets over the years.
Perfect. Great. See, I left you one easy one with the Miracle on Ice.
Okay.
Only because I didn't think of it.
I appreciate that. What do you got?
All right. Here's my last question of the face-off, my last face-off. And the only reason I bring it up is because I saw it all over Twitter last night, and this morning or this afternoon I read an entire article on SI.com about it. Elliot Friedman yesterday made a mistake. That's literally all. He just made a mistake.
He made a giant gaffe.
A giant gaffe.
Okay,
that's it.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah.
Everyone makes giant gaffes.
Yes.
It happens. What have been some of the more interesting gaffes either you have
okay,
or
I'll give you
have,
I'll give you my
people,
gaffes.
Yeah.
Okay. Because I've had a couple. By the way,
yeah.
Okay, and I called the World Swimming Championships, and I did call gold medal in a semifinal. Okay. No, I mean, you know, you're in the moment.
Sure.
My favorite, though, that people remind me to this day. In doing Montreal Expos games, we had a contest. Right? It was a home run contest. People sent in their names. And each night we added $100. There was a home run inning. Right? So everybody that came up in that inning, if we pulled your name out and someone hit a home run in that inning, then you won the money.
Yeah.
And we were up to over $2,000. And I don't remember who it was. It was a long drive to left field. And there was advertising on the outfield wall for the casino, and it was white. And if the ball goes into it, you can't see it.
Okay.
You can't see the ball. And I said it was out of here, and I feel bad for the guy who thought he won over $2,000, but it was not out of here.
That's a good guess.
It was not out of here. You know, I did call a home run that was out of there that they called not out of there. Okay? When Vladimir Guerrero should have had 40 homers and 40 steals, and the umpires made a bad call, and there was no replay at the time, I said it was out of there. They said it wasn't out of there. It was, but it wasn't. And so he never got his 40th home run of the year. And that's your opening face-off.
The opening face-off with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
So there you go. Freddie done with his opening face-offs.
I appreciate you letting me take a few draws this week.
Yes.
I had a lot of fun.
Okay.
I really did. I really enjoyed myself. So thank you, Elliot.
Yes. It was a wonderful day today as Canada won another couple of medals, a gold and a silver, and the Canadian soccer team wins, and they're still in tough. And, of course, the basketball team lost to the Americans, who have now won. The Americans have now won 45 in a row. The American women at the Olympics have now won 45 in a row. A great voice is coming up for you today. We will hear from Penny's brother. and hear from him later in the show. We'll also hear from the Impact MLS Player of the Week and a whole bunch of other stuff. Stick with us. All right, welcome back. Time for Voices. And we'll start with a guy who plays in the National Hockey League. Hey, he's famous. His sister, more famous. He is Jamie Oleksiak. That's Penny's brother. What a week it has been for the family.
I mean, we've been excited for the whole thing, and we're not expecting anything, and I think we've just been really proud of what Penny's accomplished so far. You know, whether or not she medals, I think she, you know, really carried herself way well and represented Canada great. So we've been happy, and we're just happy to be here and support her, and, you know, we're just looking forward to watch her compete again.
All right, more from Jamie coming up later in the show. Patrick Waugh on his way out of Colorado. Everyone's got an opinion. Here is John Shannon from Sportsnet, the Hockey Central analyst.
I've been told that Patrick Waugh gave Joe Sakic a list of players that he wanted in free agency, and that none of the players that were on Waugh's list were acquired by the Avalanche and by Sakic. And by the time free agency did start on July the 1st, that communication between the coach and the general manager was almost non-existent. Patrick Waugh doesn't need, you know, to be in the game of hockey, but I'm sure he would love to be. What I wouldn't be surprised is that he aligns himself with Quebecor, the people that purchased his junior hockey team, the Remparts in Quebec City, people that are endeavoring to get a National Hockey League team for Quebec City. That seems to be a marriage that would work both for Patrick and for the corporations.
John Shannon from Sportsnet. What say you, Joe Sakic?
Well, I was very surprised. It definitely caught me off guard. The guy was always involved, especially early. He was a big help to me. And, he's still, he was always involved. And he was aware of all the decisions we were making. Patrick was consulted on everything.
The whole story has not been told, my friends. Meanwhile, the players. You'll hear Eric Johnson a little bit later, Avs defenseman, talking about his love for Patrick Waugh. However, says they have confidence in Joe Sakic. They got to get a coach now. I mean, it's middle of August.
And I know Joe will do a great job finding the right guy for behind the bench, even though it is August and we start in, about a month now? So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens and who's available, but you know, with Joe Sakic in charge, we're really confident, of course, about what he's going to do, and he is the support of all the players for sure.
All right, to Impact play tomorrow in New York. They hope for more of the same from their goalkeeper, who was the player of the week, Evan Bush.
Yeah, I think it's just a byproduct of the last month of training. I feel in the last, you know, 5-6 weeks, I felt sharp and in rhythm. And, you know, last year it kind of kicked in at this time, too, where, you know, games start to mean a little bit more. And, you know, there's a little bit more tension and anxiety in games. That's when, you know, I think that you can rise to the top. And we needed every part of it because, you know, obviously we only scored one goal. So to get that 1-0 win, it was important for us, and it gives us a lot of confidence.
For Bush and the Impact, just what the doctor ordered defensively, and the hope is that's how it's going to be.
Yeah, it's been a while. You know, we've had a lot of games where we've given up, you know, maybe one dumb goal, you know, in the game. And if you look at the last, three games, we've given up two goals, but it was our first clean sheet in a while. So from that standpoint, we haven't been giving up a ton of goals lately. It's just that we've been giving up, you know, that one. And we haven't had the confidence to really shut down a game and get that clean sheet. And, you know, I think it was the same thing last year. We know we didn't have a lot of clean sheets at the start of the year, and then we rattled off quite a bit at the end. So hopefully we can hit our stride the same way this year and, you know, put a few together here.
Keeper Evan Bush, Impact tomorrow night at New York. We'll talk to Giovanni Sardo in our final hour to set that up for him. All right, the rant of the day. It does not belong to me. It belongs to a manager. They're coming after him with the knives in New York. This hasn't turned out to be the season after last season for Terry Collins. He says, suck it up, Matt.
I'm the manager here. It starts with me, and as I just have said so many times, I don't care who's not here. There are no excuses here. These are Major League Baseball players. I don't care where they came from. I don't care how they got here. The names on their back and on the front of their uniforms say they're a Major League Baseball player. It starts with them, and I don't care. I know hitting's hard. Believe me. That's why you guys are sitting there and there and there. If it was easy, we'd be watching you guys play. It's not easy. But there's a way they got here because they grind out of bats. Some guys are having a bad time, and whoa, you cannot say woe is me at this level. You cannot do it. Everybody's too good here. Nobody feels sorry for you because everybody's been humbled. And those who get out of it stay here a long time. Now, we're going to get our beat again. Don't ever mistake it, because that's part of the game here. You're going to get beat, and you're going to get beat bad sometimes. But you need to pick yourself up and move on. And that's what baseball players do.
There you go. Get over it. Great Eagles song. That was after, right? That was on, I believe, Hell Freezes Over, because that's when they were going to get back together, when Hell Freezes Over, and they ended up doing that. So there you go. Terry Collins laying it out there. Your New York Mets, suck it up, you big babies. All right. Another great day for Canada at the Olympics. A gold and a silver, and who knows what else is coming. There's more action in the pool. By the way, Penny Oleksiak will be back in the pool tomorrow for an opportunity at a fifth medal. But and, of course, she'll be bringing the flag in to the stadium when this is all over. It was Rosie McLennan that brought the flag in when it started. And she delivered today. She delivered a gold medal. It was touch and go. It was very close. But she did, and she becomes the first ever in this event. And I understand this event has not been going on forever to win a gold medal, to defend her gold medal. All right. Everything else that happened at the Olympics for Canada today that's important, we'll tell you, and some baseball scores coming up on our update. Then Dave Stubbs. We'll talk to Dave. He wrote a great story about Patrick Roy. We'll talk about that and Roy leaving Colorado and a whole bunch of other stuff. Dave Stubbs from NHL.com coming up on Sportsnet tonight with Elliot Price.
Elliot. You're a small, petty man.
Elliot.
I am king of the county.
I'm disturbed. I'm emotional.
I'm hungry.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Our balls are in your court.
Yes.
You're tuned in to Sportsnet tonight with your host, Elliot Price, exclusively on 1280 AM, Montreal.
I have no idea what the hell happened or what to do about it.
Do you ever just get down on your knees and thank God that you know me and have access to my dementia?
I have no hand in these things, all right? That is the genius of Daniel Yorio. I'm like you. I just sit back and listen to them and go, what?
It's brilliant.
I don't know. Sportsnet tonight with Elliot Price, CFMB, 1280 AM. Nice to have with us. No one, the only Dave Stubbs from NHL.com. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Elliot.
How are you?
Everything's great. How about you tonight?
Everything is wonderful. It's still summer, and it was a decent rainy day. I don't remember the last full rainy day that we had, because when it rains all day, I go pick up golf balls, and it's the first time all summer. So it's all right. It's all right, Dave.
Hey, ask me what I've done the last hour.
Dave, you're supposed to go yes.
Yes.
What have you done the last hour?
I've watched the men's 85-kilo weightlifting.
No, you have not.
Dreaming. And if you did not see Kianoush Rostami of Iran win the gold medal with a world record lift, the final lift to give him the gold medal over a Chinese lifter and a Romanian boy. I feel sorry for you because you missed some great, great dramatic stuff.
Well, I tell you, I'm spent. After watching the women hang on against France in the 1-0 game in soccer, I got nothing left, okay? I'm glad that there's no Canadian, that Penny's not swimming tonight because I'm out.
You know what? Of all of the Olympics that I have done, somehow I've made my way to the men's super heavyweight weightlifting near the end of the games or near the end of the first week. And it's one of the absolute brilliant events to go and watch and cover in, I guess it would have been in London. It would have been in Beijing in 2008. There was an Iranian lifter by the name of Hossein Rezazadeh who was the defending Olympic champion. And there was no Canadian within a million miles of the event. And when I arrived at the venue manager said, "Where do you want to sit?" And I said, "Put me right in the middle of the Iranian press corps." And it was one of the all-time great events I've ever witnessed in my life because Rezazadeh came out at the end, set a world record with this ridiculous weight. I mean, he lifted basically a bungalow, shoved it up over his head. The press corps went insane. People were howling and dancing. They were dragging me out into the aisles to dance with me. They stormed the stage. Security didn't know whether to wrestle these guys to the ground or shoot them. But it was absolutely one of the great events I've ever covered. So the super heavies go, I think, probably around 6 o'clock Montreal time on Tuesday, and it streams live on, certainly I've been following it on the Radcan stream, so if you have some time, watch it, because it's going to be very high drama. It always is.
Hey, look, for those of you that don't know, Dave has put in time on the wrestling circuit as a referee, if you don't know. Hey, by the way, if you asked me to name a weightlifter, I can only name one. And
I'm guessing it's going to be Vasily Alexeyev.
Right. The guy that won here in 1976. But there was some guy named something Sonoglu. I don't remember. And it was just one of those names that some of it apparently stays in your head.
You're talking of Pocket Hercules.
Yes.
Naeem Sonamoneglu. That's
right. Him.
The pocket. Why do I know this?
Well, I don't know. You just watched this whole thing, so you must have. You're addicted to this stuff, I guess.
No, you know the beauty of this, Elliot. When you watch this stream, is there's no commentary, so you have to know a little bit about how the sport works. But there's literally not one voice that you hear from an announcer. So you're just hearing these guys talking to their coaches backstage, and you're hearing the crowd go insane. So it's a beautiful sport to watch. It's as though you're sitting in the venue. If you put it on a nice high-definition iPad or on a screen somewhere, yeah, it looks absolutely great.
All right. Because the other night we were having dinner at Yield Orchard, and it was the pursuit, the bicycle pursuit, and I have no clue. Okay, I don't know. I know that they gave me a time at the end of the race, but I couldn't really figure out. And you know, I've been around sports my whole life, and I can usually, you give me a sport. Now, hurling is probably the only one I couldn't figure out either. But it was great to watch.
Sometimes it's better not to know the rules, right? You just watch it in its free form. It's great that way.
I guess just watch the athletic prowess of whatever it is that they're doing.
All right. Absolutely right.
All right. Hey, you're here, and I thank you for coming, and we'll talk to you again next time. No.
That sounds wonderful. Next Olympics.
Dave's here to a great story on Patrick Watt today. Really enjoyed reading it. I've known Patrick a long time. We were kind of chummy there when he was a youngster with the Canadians, and he's a big, I don't know if people realize or know, he is a huge baseball fan. And he was a card collector at the same time that I was a collector. So we used to go, we'd go to Buffalo, we'd go to Boston, you know, during the playoffs, and we'd show up at some card store to look at, and they wouldn't know who the hell he was. Big poster of him would be hanging from the ceiling with a mask on, and there's Patrick, and we're talking about the guy in the poster. They have no idea that Patrick was standing in their store right in front of them, that this is the goaltender for the Canadians.
I did a piece a couple of years ago on Carey Price actually showing up at a Depeneur on the West Island, and the woman behind the counter didn't know who he was, and they wouldn't accept a debit card.
I remember
and Carey
that.
Didn't have a credit card with him, so he's actually out on his hands and knees in his truck pulling up the floor mats trying to find change to buy a soft drink, and she throws him out of the store because she says, if you don't have the cash, get out. And meanwhile, there's a half a dozen people standing behind him with his slack-jawed saying, my God, it's Carey Price, and he can't buy a Coke. And sure enough, he left. He went down the street to a gas station and bought one there. And sort of every season now, I leave a six-pack of Coke from this Depeneur in his locker at some point during the year.
That's awesome. All right. So Patrick, says goodbye to the to the Colorado Avalanche. And it's tough to break down exactly what's going on. Is it that Patrick didn't get what he asked for, or is it that they couldn't get what he asked for, or did they not want to give him what he asked for so that he would walk? There's many different possibilities here.
Elliot, you well know Patrick Roy as I do. You probably know him better, having traveled and spent more time around the team during that time. But Patrick Roy is a control freak, right? I mean, he wants to run the show. The perfect job for him would be the president and the general manager and
the
coach and the equipment manager and the usher of his hockey team. So I think that when he could not get that from the Colorado Avalanche, when Joe Sakic was the guy who was going to pretty much still be calling the shots and was going to be pulling the strings and was the ultimate guy who was going to make the decisions on personnel, I think Patrick finally struggled with that enough and, you know, made the playoffs the first year in, struggled the last 2 years and probably figured, you know what, this isn't the dream job for me, and he's decided to walk away. Good for him, at least, to give his hockey club a bit of time so that they can find a head coach and they can get themselves organized for training camp, because as we both know, that did not happen in Montreal in 1995.
So, I mean, you know, you hear all these things, right? The moment that Patrick leaves Denver, it means that 29 cities don't really care, right? And one of them already has him projected. But let's face it, if everything you said is who Patrick is, and everything you said is who Patrick is, then he's not coming here to be the coach of the Canadiens unless Bergeron's not here either.
I don't see it. Elliot, I just don't see him working in this city. I don't see him surviving in this environment. I don't know. I could be wrong. It's entirely possible that, you know, maybe somewhere down the road he figures in the plans of this hockey club, but I just don't see it. Given the way the team is set up now, given the management structure from Jeff Molson to Marc Bergevin to Bergevin's hockey operations department, I've been asked, do you think he could be an assistant coach under Michel Therrien? That basically puts him one heartbeat away. No, I don't see that ever happening. I just don't see Patrick being a good fit here. In 2012, before the Canadiens hired Marc Bergevin, and then when Bergevin hired Michel Therrien, Patrick Roy was the fan choice to be the general manager and the coach of this hockey team. And when he first showed up here in 2014 as coach of the Avalanche, he said, I was really flattered by that. He said, everyone sort of figured that I was going to be the guy, and that was very, very impressive. I was very touched by that, but I just don't see it in this city. I don't see how he necessarily would be cut from the fabric that you need to be a head coach in this town. I honestly figured that Michel Therrien was going to have one of his meltdown moments early on in his tenure here, and he never really has had that. I mean, he wasn't the same guy who came back here, who was the guy who left here the first time around. And I think that Patrick would want too much control, and he would want to have too much say in the personnel decisions. And I hearken back to this often, and that is that no one individual has ever been bigger than the Montreal Canadiens. And when I spoke, one of the last times that I spoke with the great Jean Béliveau before he passed away, I said, how do you want to be remembered? And he said, as a teammate. And I think that speaks volumes about what is expected of a member of the Montreal Canadiens organization, whether you're a player, a coach, management, no matter what you do. I think that you're part of the product. You're one of the pieces in the puzzle. And I think that Patrick he probably sees himself as being a much bigger piece in that puzzle than a lot of people would want him to be in the city. It's not to knock him. I mean, it is his emotion. It is the fire in his belly that I wrote today. It is all these things. It's the fire inside this guy who made him the great champion and a four-time Stanley Cup winner and three-time winner of the Vezina and the Conn Smythe. Those are all... That fire is what has made Patrick Roy the guy he is, but I just don't see that as necessarily being the qualities that you need to be the head coach of the Montreal Canadiens.
We're talking to Dave Stubbs from NHL.com. Great story today on Patrick Roy. It's amazing selective memory, Dave. I don't know how many people actually remember. Everyone seems to have forgotten that when Patrick did finally get traded out of town after that terrible game, there were weeks there where the French papers were all about trading Patrick Roy, and it actually was the leader in a poll at the time. Trade Patrick Roy, yes, because there had been a time when things weren't going so well for the Montreal Canadiens. And that, I mean, since, you know, the thing with Tremblay and the trade to Denver and that, it, you know, they got you know, they didn't get what they should have gotten back, and he won two cups there. Everyone seems to have forgotten how he was treated in this city before he actually left.
Absolutely right. I mean, there was a great movement to try to get him moved. I mean, there was no question that you know, that was going to be the idea. The idea was that they were going to try to get something for Patrick. They didn't necessarily see him as being a diminished talent at that point, but at some point, right, once you get over the crest of that hill, I mean, your value tends to slip more than it tends to graduate. And so I think that was one of the considerations here. And I think the fact that the whole situation with the way his time ended in Montreal, I think the way that happened, I mean, with two enormous egos colliding, you know, you have Mario Tremblay, who arrives and who was not going to be the Jacques Demers coach. He was not going to be the kindly old coach behind the bench. And you know, in many ways, Patrick pretty much called the shots as he wanted, as they related to him. He was the guy calling the shots with Jacques Demers, and Demers was saying, look, so long as things are working with this guy, he is my cornerstone, right? So, you know, he got the benefit of the doubt some nights. Well, Mario wasn't prepared to do that. And these were two enormous personalities that collided like freight trains head-on on the same track, and the parts flew everywhere. And, you know, there is a school of thought still to this day that Patrick Roy quit on his hockey team. And people can say all they like about Mario Tremblay having left him in goal for 9 goals and all of this. But, I mean, Patrick was the guy who barged down behind the bench and got in the face of Ronald Corey and said, I played my last game here. And at that point, the Canadians were prepared to make a deal that was going to support their management team, if you will, at that point. And one of the things that bothers me, and forgive me for taking just a second to say this, is that all these years, Réjean Houle has been thrown under the bus for that trade. Well, my feeling, and Reggie has never come right out and told me, because he's too much of a company man and he would never admit to this, but I'm sure that trade was not his. He's the guy who announced it, but that trade came from above him, and he's the guy who had to pull the trigger and stand in from the media and take the heat for it. So anyway, all that said, I mean, you know, Patrick is going to step away now. He's going to take stock of what he has. There are 30 NHL teams out there. Some of them are going to get off to a rotten start. Some of them are going to implode. Some management people are suddenly going to knee-jerk a bit and say, we need a new coach before Christmas. And if Patrick is sitting there and if someone is prepared to bring him in and to let him be the kind of guy he wants to be, then they're going to have a lot of fun with him. But I don't see him being the fit in Montreal.
All right, Dave. Interesting about you made me laugh because I was thinking of a story of Patrick under Jacques Demers, and you know, Patrick looking at the entire season, the schedule, and he's going me Tugger, me Tugger.
Yeah. Well, so. Yeah, and you listen to Tugger talk about some of those games, and you know, where Patrick would not necessarily be the best roommate when these guys didn't all have single rooms. If Tugger had a game to play that night, I mean, Patrick wouldn't necessarily be the guy who would give him the time to just kind of sit and relax and get himself into his bubble, as goalies like to do. So, hey, he's an absolutely tremendous talent. He's not in the Hall of Fame by accident. What he did in this city, winning a couple Stanley Cups, what he did in Colorado, winning a couple more, being as good and as great and as cocky and as arrogant and as wonderful a goaltender as he was, no one's ever going to take that away from him. The time that he spent with the Quebec Remparts, and now 3 years with Colorado, he's learning. He's still a work in progress, and I'm sure we will see him behind an NHL bench again soon. And of course, having ad nauseum here said to you, there's no way he's ever going to wind up in Montreal. Watch. It's you know it, and I know it, Elliot. It's going to happen, right? I just don't see it.
Dave Stubbs from NHL.com, always a pleasure. Come back soon, my friend.
Call me anytime, and we'll talk Olympic weightlifting whenever you wish.
Cafe, dressed in black, tossing back a shot of rye.
Waddy. Waddy is Warren Zevon's, the late Warren Zevon's great guitarist, Waddy Wachtel. Have you ever heard the beginning to Stevie Nicks at 17?
Yep.
That's Waddy Wachtel.
Really?
Yeah. A lot of session work. He's he did a lot of guitar work on her Belladonna album.
Okay.
That was so big after she went solo, her first solo album after Fleetwood Mac. Anyway, great talking to Dave Stubbs, as usual. Tremendous stuff there. Made me laugh. And finally, we got to talk about what we're going to talk about.
Weightlifting. Weightlifting.
That's great. let's see. We'll hear from Arash Madani next on The Legacy. She's 16 years old of Penny Oleksiak. And we'll hear from Penny's brother, Jamie, coming up in just a moment. This is Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price on CFMB 1280 AM in Montreal.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
It's fantastic. I'm actually looking at a picture of the guy on his knees with the weights in front of him and his hands out. It's Iran's Klanush Rostami setting a world record and winning gold in the men's 85-kilogram weightlifting. So amazing. There you go. Congratulations to Klanush. I couldn't be happy.
The Olympic spirit is alive and well in you.
Unbelievable run so far for our golden Penny, Penny Oleksiak. She's got another race to swim tomorrow. Here's Sportsnet's Arash Madani on that subject. And we thank him again for joining us earlier in the week live from Rio.
On a rainy night here in Rio. The historic significance of what Canada's newest star has achieved cannot be understated. After all, never before had Canada opened a Summer Olympics, winning medals in each of the first 6 days. Then again, never has this country seen a phenom quite like Penny Oleksiak. Consider this. In the last four Summer Games, Canada won a total of four medals in men's and women's swimming. Sydney, Athens, Beijing, London. Four total medals. Then along came this week, and a 16-year-old from Toronto has won four herself, including Olympic gold. Two came as the anchor leg in relays. Two came on her own. The last of them standing atop the podium in the deepest and most competitive event in all of women's swimming, the 100-meter freestyle. So who is Canada's golden Penny? Well, for one, her family still calls her Penelope. She's like any other teenager, addicted to her phone, always on social media. Oleksiak was a nervous wreck before Thursday's race. Teammates try to calm her down. Canadian Olympic coach Ben Titley sat her down. They chatted Drake, Chance the Rapper, and boys. Four medals in less than a week. Canada's first gold. And Penny Oleksiak was disappointed because she couldn't get tickets to the Drake concert. So I asked her not long after O Canada played at the swimming pool, maybe Drizzy should bring you up on stage, Penny. You've got the gold. You've got three other medals. She looked at me and nearly doubled over. Oh, my God, I don't know what I do. I would just scream and cry. That would be the craziest thing. A teenager, Penny Oleksiak, Olympic champion. Isn't all of this just wild? Oleksiak and fellow 16-year-old Taylor Ruck, teammates, they're the first two Olympic medal-winning athletes of any country to be born in the 2000s. What we've learned here in Rio is that this is just beginning. Until Rio, Canada had gone 20 years without a women's swimming medal in the Olympics. Until Penny Oleksiak arrived here. A story beyond belief. At the 2016 Summer Olympic Games, I'm Arash Madani in Rio.
There you go, Arash Madani. By the way, a couple of things. First of all, some interesting decisions that Penny's going to have to make. Is she going to turn pro and make a whole lot of money, or is she going to swim for some college in the United States? And if that's the case... I thought it was very funny, considering the stringent rules that the NCAA has, somebody better not give her free tickets to see Drake. If you get those tickets, you better buy them. That's all I got to say.
Even before she's on any team?
She's an amateur. She's an amateur. Anyways. Here's her brother. You think you're surprised? What if I tell you the family is surprised? Here's Jamie Oleksiak, who, by the way, plays in the National Hockey League.
No, I mean, not at all. I think she surprised everyone, including our family. You know, I think I didn't even know she was, you know, I always knew she was good, but I never knew she was, you know, Olympic good until she really qualified for the team and whatnot. But I think, you know, she's only been swimming for the past 5 years, and what she's done is incredible. And I think this Olympics was kind of her chance to, you know, get her feet wet, you know, literally, I guess. And but she, despite all the odds stacked against her and whatnot, she's done incredible. So it's really, it says a lot about her competitiveness and, you know, just the work she's put in.
Penny Oleksiak's brother, Jamie Oleksiak, he's a brother, right? That's his little sister.
You know, she's my little sister, and I think she's always going to kind of be my little sister. And, you know, even here, I mean, we see her in the pool, and it just seems like she's a whole different person altogether. She's just focused and dialed in. And then she actually came out of the pool after she won the silver and came and sat in the stands with us. And, you know, we were joking around, and I was giving her a hard time and stuff like that. And I think, you know, she's kind of got these two personalities when she's out of the pool. And then when she hits that deck, she's just, you know, she's just got the blinders on her.
Unbelievable. And it's crazy because she was in seventh place halfway through the race, and she won it, which is ridiculous. You see the pictures of where she was in comparison to everybody else, and the amount of water that she made up in the last 50 is just nuts. For Jamie Oleksiak and the rest of the family, it has been unbelievable taking all this in.
I mean, we've been excited for the whole thing, and we're not expecting anything. And I think we've just been really proud of what Penny's accomplished so far. You know, whether or not she medals, I think she, you know, really carried herself way well and represented Canada great. So we've been happy, and we're just happy to be here and support her. And, you know, we're just looking forward to watch her compete again.
Did you know her name 2 weeks ago? Nobody knew her name. Now no one will ever forget it. Welcome to the Olympics of 2016. Unreal. Penny Oleksiak. And I wonder what her family thought her chances were of winning a medal. But it's amazing how she's burst onto the scene. And my goodness, 4 years from now, what might she be? Anyway, she's got tomorrow night. She's got one more of these. And we'll tell you everything else that's going on in the Olympics, and we'll move past the 20s in our National Football League countdown with DK Daniel Kalis coming up. Who's next on the list? That's after our update.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight, brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
By the way, Canada has added another medal. Yes, it's a woman. Yes, it's in the pool. Man, what a swimming team the Canadian women have at this Olympics. It's a bronze medal in the 200-meter backstroke, Hillary Caldwell. So Canada with a gold, a silver, and a bronze today. Very good day, and her smile could just light up Rio right now. Hillary Caldwell, a bronze for Canada in the 200-meter backstroke. Time to move on to team number 19 in our NFL countdown. Man, this is moving right along. We're almost at the halfway point. We're still alive. the Dallas Cowboys and the Oakland Raiders, at least until Monday. The host's teams live because today's team is Dan Kalis.
The New Orleans Saints.
The New Orleans Saints. You know what? It's pretty amazing, you know, considering what they've been through over the years, that the Saints are still fair to middling. Because let's face it, we're at a place right now where if you jump it a little bit, you can make the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. That these teams that we're talking about, these are right at the spot. The thing with the Saints are they're going to live and die with how their defense does. They were like the Giants last year, a historically bad defense. And the best thing about their defense this year is they do not have Rob Ryan as their defensive coordinator. That alone should help them out.
All right. What they have is Drew Brees. And you wonder, I mean, at what point? Of course, Tom Brady keeps on doing it over there. And Peyton Manning didn't have everything that he had, but he won a championship and they had a great defense. But, I mean, how long could Drew Brees keep doing this?
I think he said he thinks he can play another 4 or 5 years. I'm not sure he can go that much longer. But last year he was great, and they switched tight ends this year. They lost Ben Watson. They got Kobe Fleener from the Colts, who's very good. They added Michael Thomas in the second round, everyone has been raving about this guy in camp. They're excited to see him. Brandon Cooks is going to be the third-year receiver. He really came on at the end of last year. They also got the young kid, Willie Snead. So they've got some weapons right there. Mark Ingram looks like he's you know, the guy who's ready to go for them. I don't see any reason that Brees is gonna slow down anytime right now.
All right. How much will this help them? Former Sanford star Courtland Finnegan announced his retirement from football, you know, March 2015. He joins his second team since then. The Saints signed him today.
I'm not sure. I think that's more because they're looking for some depth because they've had some injuries recently in camp. To Keenan Lewis, they're starting in that corner, so I guess they need some depth. But I think he's going to be more depth. They really like T.J. Williams and the other former CFL, Delvin Brogo, had a really good first season there last year. They also added some guys on the D-line through the draft and free agency. They have they got Dennis Allen running their defense. He had some very good years running Denver's defense a couple years ago. Their defense doesn't have to be the best in the league when they have an offense like theirs. It just can't be, you know, a historically bad defense like they had last year.
We're counting them down. The National Football League, we're down to our 19th team as we work our way to number one the day before the season starts. That'll be September 7th. First game is September 8th. You mentioned new people along the defensive line and the historically bad defense. They were 25th in the league last year with 31 sacks. How did they get after the quarterback with the talent and the schemes that they run better than they did a year ago?
Well, they drafted Sheldon Rankins out of Louisville, and they added Nick Fairley from the Rams last year. Both those guys should help, and if they can help plug up the middle, that can allow, you know, Pro Bowler Cameron Jordan to get there. They also just need their safeties who are solid to play well. They need the corners to play well to keep them. They just need everyone to be healthy. They added James Laurinaitis from the Rams, who they hope can be the quarterback of the defense, which I think can help everything, is having the guys in place and just not making the mistakes. They just made a ton of mistakes last year, being in the wrong places, penalties, wrong assignments. So I think a lot of it is they feel that if they simplify things and make things just a little bit easier and guys just know where they have to be and do it, maybe that alone can help their defense.
Well, it doesn't help if you're in the same conference as the Panthers. They have Falcons. They have Bucks. How do they stand? Because let's face it, you play everybody in your own conference two times. How do they measure up against? Now, the Buccaneers have already been in our list of bad teams, and the Falcons.
Yeah, so I think the Carolina Panthers are definitely the cream of the crop in this division. While I think that Tampa will be a team that is on the rise, as we discussed a couple of days ago, I don't think much of the Atlanta Falcons. I think the Saints' defense is improved. They're going to win more games than they did last year because that defense is improved. Their offense is going to put up numbers. I think that they can, if their defense can improve to, more like 20th or, you know, top 15, 20th in the league. With that offense, they can fight for a wild card.
All right, National Football League news today. Tyrod Taylor gets a big contract in Buffalo.
Yeah, they basically were able to give themselves a little bit of leeway with it by giving him, a $6.5 million raise this year. And the rest of the contract is sort of tied up to if he's on the roster next year. So if he's on the roster next year, he gets everything about a $27 million, you know, bonus and contract and everything right there. So if he has a great year this year, then he'll get all this money next year. And if he doesn't, they're not locked into it. But he's still got himself, you know, an extra $6.5 million this year.
All right, interesting news considering the Pittsburgh Steelers' new tight end, Ladarius Green, was supposed to replace Heath Miller, and it was thought all along that it was an ankle injury keeping him out, but it's recurring headaches, and that's not good news for a guy with a history of concussions.
Oh, no, it's definitely not good news, and there's a lot of, you know, conflicting reports about where this might go and what might happen to it. I think right now, you know, they're going to have to sort of proceed as if you know, he will not be there to at least start the season at best, and maybe even, you know, not have him at all this season. So they're going to have to proceed. And that's a loss because he played really well when he got a chance to replace Antonio Gates in San Diego. And they were hoping for big things, especially with Keith Miller out. Big Ben's always liked to hit his tight ends, and Green's got a ton of talent. So this is going to hurt. This is a guy they went after pretty early in free agency, and they were very happy to get him. So we're going to have to watch this very closely.
All right, back to the Saints before we go. What's the best thing that could happen to the Saints this year? How high can they go, and what would have to happen to make that happen?
I think the offense, as long as the offense is healthy, the offense will be fine, and they'll put up the numbers. If the defense can be good, the Saints can be a 9-win team and make it in the playoffs. So once you're in the playoffs, you never want to go up against a guy like Drew Brees because you can never count him out.
The Browns, the Niners, the Titans, the Ravens, the Lions, the Bucks, the Chargers, the Rams, the Falcons, the Bears, the Dolphins, Washington, and the Eagles. And now, the New Orleans Saints. Daniel Kalis, we'll talk to you on Monday.
Have a good weekend, everyone.
All right. On the street, loose and complete under sky, so smoky blue-green. I can't foresee a Dixie did she, so we dance the sidewalk clean. My memory is muddy, what's this river that I'm in? New Orleans is sinking, man, and I don't want to swim.
There's a Warren Zevon song and a Tragically Hip song for every possible situation. New Orleans is sinking. They are team number 19. So let's see. 18, 17, 16, 15, 14. We'll be down to 14 by the end of next week. And you know what that means? That means we are 14 working days from opening day in the National Football League. So that's exciting. We continue with our countdown from Dan Kalis. He'll be back on Monday. We'll see who he has up his sleeve when we get to pick number 18 Monday as Grant Robinson returns for everything. Back for opening faceoff and all that stuff. Again, Canada with another medal. Hillary Caldwell in the 200-meter women's backstroke. She wins the bronze medal, and Canada has added a third medal on the day. There was the gold from Rosie McLennan, who won our only gold medal 4 years ago. She wins again in the ladies' trampoline. And the silver to Lindsay Jenerich and Patricia Obi in rowing lightweight doubles. And now Hillary Caldwell. So good day for Canada. Three medals, gold, silver, bronze, and golden penny will get back into the pool tomorrow in a team relay. She did not participate. How about this? She did not participate in today's relay that got Canada into that race, and they still set a Canadian record without her. So you'd think, you know, we got a pretty good chance here. I'm just saying. All right. More on Patrick Waugh, Eric Johnson, a defenseman, and man, oh man, he's saying, well, let's listen to what he's saying coming up next. He will miss Patrick Waugh.
Christ.
Yeah, baby.
I am not to be troubled with.
Could I be a little more Weasley?
Yes.
We're on a mission from God.
One, two.
Never ends.
Missed it by that much.
Let's face it, this is not the worst thing you've caught me doing.
So, Patrick Waugh is out in Colorado, in Denver. And an opportunity to hear from Eric Johnson, defenseman on the team, and get a feeling not only how he feels, but how many veterans on the team feel as well. There is no doubt the players are going to miss him. Have a listen. Whoops.
And I was skating at the practice rink, and I got off the ice, and I had a couple missed calls from Patty, and I'm like, oh, God, I got traded. Where am I going? I guess you just don't really think the news would be Patty stepping down, but I talked to him on the phone, and he just said it was just time for him to go, and he didn't really elaborate too much, but I don't want to share too much of the intricate details of what we talked about, but from the player's perspective, myself and probably 90% of my teammates, which is a lot on any team, because no coach is going to have everyone that loves them, but I can tell you that probably over 90% of the guys absolutely loved playing for Patty. We respected him. We thought he was a great coach, and we'll all really miss him. I had a bunch of phone calls right after the news broke from a lot of the different guys, and everyone was super upset just because of how much we love playing for Patty, and it's going to be tough for sure. It'll be an adjustment, and especially the timing of it is very strange, to say the least. You know, definitely thought it would maybe be sometime after the season, not right before it's going to start. But at the end of the day, the players have to be pissed at themselves. I mean, I'm mad at myself. I'm sure there's a ton of guys that are mad at themselves, because if we played better and won, this wouldn't happen. I mean, obviously, there are some disagreements that probably happened, which led to this. And at the end of the day, if the players just went out and did their job and we won hockey games and made it to the playoffs and did a lot better, this would be a non-issue, and we'd still be playing for Patty, and he'd still be the coach of the Avs. So at the end of the day, we have to take a lot of responsibility, because at the end of the day, that's why he's not here. And it's very, very sad for especially me. I really loved him. He really helped me turn my career around, and I know a lot of the guys are really upset too.
Okay, but it's important to know that a lot happened at the end of the day. Eric Johnson, Avalanche defenseman, and you heard him say that, you know, he texted and talked to some of the veterans on the team, so we need to know, who are these guys?
Yeah, I had Cody call me, I had Blake Como call me, I had a couple other guys shoot me some texts, and when the veteran guys on the team, you know, really respect and like the coach, it says a lot. And those are some of the veteran guys, leaders on our team, who really, you know, were taken aback by the news and are upset about it. And at the end of the day, we're going to be upset, but, you know, we're players for the Colorado Avalanche, and our job is to go out and perform no matter who's behind the bench. So while as upset we are that Patty's not here, we have to go out and do a job for the fans, for the city, and we have to go out and play hockey and get this team back to the playoffs, because it shouldn't matter who's coaching. We should go out and be pros and do our job, and that's what we're going to do. But at the end of the day, it is sad, because we all really love Patty.
So there you go. So now, no Patrick Waugh to coach that team. My, what a great season they had in Patrick Waugh's first season, and not so much last year. And now, I mean, here it is. I mean, what's the date today? It's August 12th, and the season is not that far into the future. And I don't know. Does Mark Crawford want a do-over in his assistant what is it? It's not. He's not assistant coach. He is associate coach in Ottawa. Can he get out of it? Are they interested? Would they be interested in bringing him back to Denver? Bottom line is Eric Johnson and the boys have confidence in Joe Sakic that they'll get somebody decent by the time the season starts.
And I know Joe will do a great job finding the right guy for behind the bench, even though it is August and we start in, what, about a month now? So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens and who's available. But, you know, with Joe Sakic in charge, we're really confident, of course, about what he's going to do. And he is the support of all the players for sure.
And you got to feel good about yourself. How many times have we said, no matter how bad a team is, right, the guys in that dressing room believe they're going to win, okay? They believe today it's all going to change, and today we're going to start a winning streak. We're a good team. We have good players in here, and we're going to start winning. So why wouldn't Eric Johnson think? Who wouldn't want to coach this team?
I would assume coaches would be falling over themselves trying to coach this team. I mean, while we haven't got the results we wanted the last couple of years, the talent's there. And, you know, if you look at our top three forwards, our defense, our goalie. I mean, there's a lot of operational and talent there that I think a lot of coaches would like to, you know, form into a winning team, which I know we can be. And we have great depth. We've added good depth. And, you know, this is a hockey town that's waiting to explode with a winner. And I know that I want to do the best I can because it would be so much fun to get this town another cup. I mean, I just remember being a kid and watching Joe and Patty and all those guys, Footy and Borky and all those legendary players win the cup. And I think it'd be so cool to do it in Denver. And I think we've got a great shot at it. And, you know, if anything, this should be a wake-up call to the players' team because, like I said, if we got the job on the ice, this is a non-issue and Patty's still here. And it's up to us to put up or shut up because at the end of the day, it's our team and we have to be the ones that guide this team the right direction.
Thank Sports Radio in Colorado, in Denver, for doing that interview today with Eric Johnson and allowing us to use it. So they're going to miss him. They're going to miss Patrick Waugh. Say what you want about how good or bad a coach he is. The players thought he was a good coach. And Eric Johnson made no bones about it. 90% of the guys are going to miss him. And that's a pretty good number in any dressing room. Because, as he said, there's no coach in the world that's going to have a 100% following when it comes to the players. Everybody gets to play when they want. Not everybody gets power play time. Not everybody gets to go on the ice when there's a minute left in an empty net. And you'd be surprised how much that is a topic of conversation. And something that upsets players sometimes. Sometimes that's a free point right there. If you can, you know, if you are defensively responsible, you'll be out there. And if you're not out there, then you know right away what the coaching staff thinks about you when it comes to closing out hockey games. Anyway, there you go. Patrick Waugh out in Colorado. And now the search is on. They need a coach.
You mentioned Mark Crawford. There is one other former Avalanche Stanley Cup winning coach that now doesn't have a job.
Yeah, Bob Hartley doesn't have a coach. So we'll see what they do over there. Should be interesting, and I would imagine they've got to take care of this because there's a lot of decisions to be made, and I don't know too many teams that have been without a coach in the middle of August in the National Hockey League. So we'll see. We've got an update for you and our conversation with Giovanni Sardo, getting you ready for the Impact game coming up tomorrow as we continue on Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price. This is CFMB 1280 in Montreal.
To Sportsnet Tonight with your host Elliot Price, right here on 1280 AM Montreal.
What do you mean I'm not an expert?
Ding, 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 ding.
It's time to talk soccer. I know that Giovanni Sardo is usually here for Impact Soccer, but Canada wins today. They win and on to the semifinals in Olympic soccer. Giovanni, how are you?
Cautiously optimistic about the Impact.
Okay. What about Canada's women's soccer team winning today? It was tense.
It was tense, but I think that, you know, the women's team, they're very well coached by Coach Herdman. You know, they come out, it's always high pressure, high intensity, and they're just being rewarded for, you know, the work that they're putting in. I'm absolutely not surprised to see them win today.
But my goodness, who put this schedule together for them? Obviously having to go against two of the top five teams in the world in Germany and Australia in the first round, and then drawing France, the third best, and now to play Germany again. This is ridiculous. Of course, they're down to the semifinals. They should be playing one of the top four in the world. I'm just saying, you know?
It's ridiculous, but you know what? If you want to be the best, you got to beat the best.
I know.
And despite the horrible schedule, well, you just got to, you know, take what comes.
All right. Impact, and this is the road game. You know, we were looking at the schedule last week at this time. And, you know, there were three home games, one road game. We talked about 9 points. They got the three at home. Wasn't easy. Late goal. And now this is the road game before they come home for the next two. So what do they have to do here to get 3 points? Never mind one. Obviously, you want one on the, you know, at least one. This is a very difficult matchup for them.
Absolutely, and the New York Red Bulls right now are hurting. They got a lot of different players that are out. They're missing their captain, Dax McCarty. Perinella is out. But the most notable player missing for the New York Red Bulls right now is their right back, Connor Lade. So, you know, if he's playing on the right-hand side of the defense, that means that Nacho Piatti, who operates on the left, is going to go up against his replacement, which may be Sal Zizzo, but he's very inconsistent. So the main point of this game is to get the ball to Piatti and have him dominate the left-hand side and open up space for hopefully what will be a two-forward system with Drogba and Mancosu.
It was interesting to hear Piatti talk about it. Some people asked him. He was asked how it would it close up space for him with having two strikers out there, and he went, no, I like this better. So how does this make Piatti a better player or make the Impact better?
Well, by having two strikers out there, you're giving more offensive options for Piatti to distribute the ball. And Drogba and Mancosu, they have different profiles. Mancosu's able to run right out to defense, you know, play right off of the offside line, whereas Drogba, he can, you know, set up camp a little bit everywhere, so he can do a give and go with Piatti, or he can help launch Mancosu. You know, basically what they're getting is a lot more creativity, and it's going to be needed because when you have a guy like Patrice Bernier, who, you know, has a fractured foot now and is out for a few weeks, they're going to rely heavily on Donadel and Bernardello. And, you know, when we spoke earlier this week, when we were talking about one guy to remove from the lineup, well, Bernier's injury kind of solved that issue for the Impact.
All right. Obviously, coming off a clean sheet, Evan Bush, one of the players of the week, and wasn't just a clean sheet. Man, he made some huge saves, especially down the stretch. And, hey, let's face it, you need goalkeeping if you're going to have an opportunity to win games.
Exactly. And as he said in, you know, in the soundbite that you had earlier on the show, you know, he feels like he's really coming into his own and really able to start dominating. And that's what the Impact are going to need from him down the stretch. With the rumors of Oyongo potentially leaving or staying, you know, you need your goalkeeper to solidify your defensive line, to make the big plays, to give your defense a confidence boost. And when everybody's playing on the back line with more confidence, it allows you to take more chances on the offense. It's a huge domino effect.
All right, looking at the standings, it's still the Impact have played fewer games than the three teams in front of them. And this is it, right? I mean, here you have this road game and then the two home games. They have the fewest losses in the league, but man, oh man, they have had a lot of draws.
They got to be able to close out games. They got to be able to, you know, really solidify that defense, stop giving up the bonehead goals throughout the games. And now they have the opportunity with having two hot strikers to really be able to put additional pressure on the opposing defenses and make life basically a living hell for the other goalkeeper. So they'll be able to score a lot more goals so that if they take in one on the back end, they should be still safe for the 3 points.
All right, handicap this for me. You have the two New York teams and Toronto FC in front of them. Never mind the points. Measure the Impact up against those three teams. Where do they stand?
When healthy, I think that they can take on any one of the teams. So if they can stay healthy, if they can get Bernier back in a couple of weeks, the Eastern Conference is theirs to lose.
And, I mean, you look at the schedule ahead and closing. You talked about closing, but it's not only closing individual games, it's closing this season and really starting to gel. It was sort of a mishmash season. I mean, they lost this guy to Belgium and this guy here, and with Euro, it was just, and Drogba was, and then he wasn't, and now they got a new player. This is it right now. This is an opportunity to get these guys on the field right now and playing together and turning into a cohesive unit and heading on down the stretch with this group of guys.
It's all about chemistry, and that's something that they've struggled with all season. You know, players on international duties, players who were injured. Now they finally have all the bodies back in camp. It's a dogfight at every single practice for playing time. The guys know exactly, you know, who's the one who's supposed to be the starter. The one who's not the starter knows what he has to do to try and get playing time. It basically is forcing everybody to elevate their game on the Impact. And when you're able to get, you know, a tough win like you did against the Dynamo, well, then it just boosts everybody's confidence level. And it's happening at the perfect time. They need to move up in the standings. This is the time to do it.
Yeah, and we talked about Mancosu. I mean, here's a guy that they're creating an opportunity for him. He scored a huge goal in the last game, and I would imagine there's pressure here to deliver if you want to continue on. And, man, if he does, they're a whole different team.
Well, whenever you're able to put in a second striker who has experience, you know, Mancosu, he's not a player coming out of anywhere. He's not a young kid. He led Italy's second division in goals only a few years ago. So, you know, he has a knack for the net. He's a very talented striker. Add that to, you know, the legendary Drogba, and with Nacho Piatti, it just gives so many different offensive weapons to the team that, you know, opposing defenses now can't just focus in on one guy. The game plan is way too big, and it allows, you know, the Impact a lot of opportunities to score a lot of goals.
You got a feeling for tomorrow?
I'm going to call a 3-2 win for the Impact.
Want to tell me who's going to score the goals? No, I mean, if you're going to do predicting here, I'm just, yeah.
Well, let's go for one for each of the top dogs. So you'll go one for Piatti, one for Drogba, and one for Mancos.
Well, I like that. Very good. Hey, look, if you're right, you know, I think I might put a shekel down or two. You know, I'm just saying.
Oh, the only thing I'm going to say, if you're going to put a shekel down or two on the game, you know, don't forget the guy who gave you the prediction. So, you know, you can throw half a shekel my way.
I hate to tell you what a shekel's worth these days, my friend. Right. Giovanni Sardo, thank you. We'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for getting us up to date on the Montreal Impact.
My pleasure. Have a great evening, guys.
So the Impact play tomorrow night, and now we'll have to see what happens with the Montreal Alouettes in their next game and what happens this week. They lose 23-12 on the road at Edmonton, and they have now fallen to 2-5. And, you know, we're talking about how everyone was feeling about the coach, and there seemed to be a little bit of friction between players and coach going into that last game, and winning is what's needed to help smooth out those kind of rough edges, and they didn't do that at Edmonton. And that, if you're ever going to win a road game, that certainly seems like where it could happen. Now they have to play against Ottawa, and Ottawa is coming off the bye week, so this is not an easy task. Ottawa with a 4-2-1 record and on top of the Eastern Division. And the Montreal Alouettes are going there next. So we'll see. We'll see where this goes. But and we know, look, it's the Canadian Football League. And all you have to do is put together a little winning streak, make the playoffs, and win three games. And you win the Grey Cup. It's that simple. No, seriously. I know we're all laughing, right? But it's been done before, right? You get hot. You come together. And... but I got to tell you, right now, it doesn't look like this team is that team. Stranger things have happened. That's all I can say.
Just make the playoffs really applies in the CFL.
Right, right, look, they're only, they are 2 points behind Hamilton. Hamilton at 3-3, Toronto's 4-2, Ottawa 4-2-1. So they need to put together a winning streak. Right now, their winning streaks are what? One? That's not a winning streak. That's a win.
That's right.
All right. What else do we have for you tonight? I hope you're enjoying the show. The Toronto Blue Jays having a difficult time tonight. And they are, of course, a first-place team. We talked earlier in the week about Jose Bautista and what this latest injury not only will cost the Toronto Blue Jays as far as not having him in the lineup and needing him going down the stretch here, but also what does this mean as far as Bautista is concerned with his contract for next year. And as we listen to the interview done today with Jonah Carey by Jeff Blair, I was thinking, and maybe you will too, if he's going to be downgraded as far as the years on the contract are concerned and a little bit on the dollars, doesn't this make it a whole lot easier for the Toronto Blue Jays? Is it something that they might want to revisit right now and talk to him? Because he's not, of course, there's always idiots out there, right? When it comes to Major League Baseball, there's always someone willing to offer you more than everyone else thinks that you could possibly get. And we'll hear about who Jonah thinks that is coming up in the interview with Jeff Blair in a moment or two.
Now, somewhere in the backwoods of the island of Perot, there lived a dude named Elliot Price. Oh, and
one day a week on the air just wouldn't suffice. So now he does this every weeknight on CFMB. That's 1280 AM, people. And so now he doesn't have to get up early in the morning and he's clicking his heels. Elliot Price, from the pitch to the ice, talks about sports every weeknight. You better tune in, 'cause he knows where you live, and he'll send some of his friends over.
Of course, that's if he had any friends.
Okay, all right, fancy boy. You know, I don't have to run these here and take this kind of abuse, all right? I'll listen through next time, and we won't have any more of that, I'm telling you right now. All right. In case you missed it, Canada with another medal tonight in the 200-meter backstroke. Great job by Hillary Caldwell, and that's one of each for the day. Gold medal for Rosie McLennan as she defends her women's trampoline, the first Canadian summer athlete ever to defend a gold medal. It's not like we've won billions and billions of gold medals that so many people have had an opportunity to defend, but unbelievably impressive. It was touch and go. It was close. I think the in watching it, the CBC announcers were a little surprised that she ended up getting enough points for the victory, but she did, and she won the gold medal, so two gold for Canada now. Added another silver with Lindsay Jenrick and Patricia Obi in the rowing lightweight doubles. And so three on the day. And looking at tomorrow's schedule, by the way, I think Graham Dillette sits sixth now after 2 days in the men's golf, and they'll play round three tomorrow. I'm looking at the medal events for the day. Women's coxed eight, and Canada is involved in that. So there you go. An opportunity for Canada to win a medal there. The other medal events on the day won't take place until later in the day. At 8:30, there's the men's 10,000 meters. At 9:11 tomorrow night, the men's 1,500 freestyle. That's swimming. And finally, last chance for Penny Oleksiak to win a medal, along with three other girls in the women's 4x100 medley. Kylie Mist, Taylor Ruck, amongst the Canadians who will give it a go. And, of course, Taylor has already won a medal. And as you heard earlier from Arash Madani, Taylor Ruck and Penny Oleksiak are the only athletes at these games with medals that were born in the 2000s. So they obviously are the two youngest athletes in Rio that have won medals. Unbelievable. All right, the interview that we were talking about, where does the contract situation for Jose Bautista sit when you consider that he now has a knee injury and he's already been on the disabled list twice? Here's a conversation on the Jeff Blair Show with our buddy Jonah Carey.
Speaking of the Jays, Jose Bautista back on the disabled list with a sprained knee, went on a couple of days ago. This brought up the question yesterday on this show and other shows and probably a few other outlets as well about what this year is doing to Jose Bautista's value as a free agent. And I wanted to ask you, there are market factors here. Free agent's value can depend, quite honestly, in the availability of other free agents in at that position, whether they're free agents or the availability of players and trade at that position. But right now, Jose Bautista, life and death, they keep his average around 230, not hitting a lot of home runs, walking a great deal. Is that the type of guy that somebody's going to give a five-year contract to at this age in free agency?
The thing about, I'm a big believer in this, the thing about walk year performance, the thing about what you do become a free before you become a free agent, is it gives teams an excuse to act a certain way. It doesn't exactly change your value. It changes what teams can get away with. So if Jose Bautista was hitting 45 home runs this year and batting 310 and playing 162 games, in addition to walking and all that stuff, he would probably get his five-year contract. That doesn't necessarily make him a better player. It's just the timing of it means that somebody, an overzealous owner, often Artie Moreno, to be honest with you, but somebody is going to pay that kind of money because, oh, this is a star, we got to do it. It doesn't mean that he became a better player. It means that he happened to have timed it up that way. It's the exact same thing on the downside. This now gives teams an excuse to say, we're holding the line financially. Yes, Jose Bautista has a great track record, but gee whiz, look what he did. He stubbed his toe, and now we have to give him a two-year contract. Jose Bautista is fundamentally the same player this year as he was last year. I know the numbers don't reflect that. I know the injuries don't reflect that. But generally speaking, players don't completely fall off a cliff. You want to assign him a 3 or 4 or 5% downturn in overall value because he's a year older. I'm okay with that. Like, you can call it a slight downturn. But he's the same guy. He's not a high average guy. It's power and patience. He's not a good defender. He wasn't a good defender when he was healthy either. He has a good arm, but he takes bad routes to the ball and he's slow. And that's worth something. That's worth something in this market. And he's not really a dissimilar player to Encarnacion, despite the fact that Encarnacion's numbers look a lot better. And the tactile element of it, when you watch a Blue Jays game, Encarnacion's coming up. This is a three-run home run. Mm-hmm. You watch Jays game and Bautista's coming up. He's going to ground out to second. I understand that sentiment, but they're pretty similar players right now. And it is unfortunate for Bautista's wallet that that's going to happen. But I think that if he does go out and get a two-year contract with a vesting option or something like that, it's going to be a bargain because dude can still hit. He's not going to be good fielding. He's not going to be good running. But you get a short-term contract for a guy with that kind of bat and assume that he does come back healthy. The small sample size will result in somebody getting a bargain.
And there you go. Joe Nicari and Jeff Blair, two people that I've spent much time with. So, great baseball people. Meanwhile, the Blue Jays are a couple of outs from going down tonight. They're down 5-3 to the Houston Astros. That ball game now in the bottom of the ninth inning. And two out and nobody on. And Russell Martin coming to the plate. Sorry, I thought I had a sneeze coming on. Red Sox lead the Arizona Diamondbacks 9-3. And should that hold up, the Red Sox would get a little closer to first place. Maybe. Because the Baltimore Orioles are playing at San Francisco tonight, and the Orioles are a half game out of first place, and they are just about to go. Dylan Bundy and Matt Cain, and you are up to date. They would be called them Crooked Vultures. It was a little bit of a super group there.
Can I try to name one?
Okay.
Soundgarden, is Chris Cornell in this?
No.
Okay.
Well
then
what did you think he was doing in this song?
I thought he was singing.
No, that's the lead singer from Queens of the Stone Age.
Ah, whom I love, by the way. I do like them.
Yeah. It's also with Dave Grohl.
Okay.
And from way, way back, John Paul Jones from Led Zeppelin.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So them Crooked Vultures. Hope you enjoyed that. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Great talking to Dave Stubbs. When we finally got around to talking to Dave Stubbs, I thought it was more entertaining when we were talking about the weightlifting.
It's fantastic.
And the wrestling. And, of course, about Patrick Wasser. It was great to have him on. Giovanni Sardo taking care of our impact. And also, we talked to Daniel Kalis talking Our NFL countdown, we are down to Team 18 on Monday. Team 18 on Monday. That should be a lot of fun as we continue on until September 8th when the National Football League season opens up. Thanks for all the stuff to the people in Toronto at Sportsnet 590 for helping us out, including that the great stuff with Penny's brother, Jamie Oleksiak. So she goes for another gold medal tomorrow, along with the Canadian relay team. And we have our fingers crossed. Have yourself a great weekend. If you missed any of this, we are on sportsnet.ca. You can catch our podcast there. We'll retweet them on Twitter, and you can follow us there. Thanks to David Mione and Freddie Iuni. Grant is back on Monday. I'm Elliot Price. See ya.